Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This episode of the DTFH has been made possible by Squarespace.com. Head to Squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
I'm still believing.
You're a robot.
You're a robot.
The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is the proud recipient of the following awards: the Lord Darrington Champagne Toast Greenie, the King Carrot Happy Time Award, Salon.com's most poignant podcast of 2017, the National Cemetery Association's Crow Award for most heartfelt personal anecdote about Anthony Bourdain, the Peckington Twisty, the Webby Athlete of the Year, the Pulitzer Endowment Prize, the Big Bear Big Dick Bear Jamboree Award for Best Podcast to Listen to in a Glory Hole, the Cashtown Grease Fist Award, the Titanium Lords of Jupiter Award for Cutest Cosmic Ray, the Blue Ribbon Plate Plotter Award, the Dandy Bowtie and Glasses Clickster, Dolphin Dave's Women's Empowerment Crystal Cup of Aquatic Freedom, the Grave Robbers Association of America Coffin Candy Slosher, the You, the person listening to this podcast, are actually a robot. They replaced your body last night with an android and filled your mind with all your past memories. You will never know that you are a robot. We mean you, the person listening to this podcast, are now a robot. You are no longer a person, but are an android. You are a robot. Award. The Ajit Pai Internet Freedom Award. And as of yesterday, the Ram Dass Foundation Award for most enlightened and beautiful man that has ever lived or will ever live. Not just in this dimension, but in all dimensions. There will never be another award like this, because there will only be one you. There will never be anyone more enlightened than you, Duncan Trussell, forever and ever and ever, from now on. Bigger than anyone who's ever been enlightened, happier and more spiritual, uber spirituality, most spiritual man and most beautiful, scented, sweet like lavender and pine, smiles radiate equanimity for all things, and birds land on his shoulders, and when he walks through the forest, if there was a tiger or a lion nearby, it would come and dance with him and lick his feet. Award for happiest and coolest sweetie that will ever be. Rainbow Heart Award of true, pure astral freedom. Thank you so much to all my awarders. I give you an award for the smartest award decision of 2018, if you gave me an award. Man, it feels so good to have all these awards. But you know what feels better? The fact that I've got an incredible podcast to offer you with Jack Kornfield. We're going to jump right into that. But first, some quick business.
He did not have a website, and so a gargoyle carried him away. She did not have a website. She was arrested by the king. They did not have a website. Now they burn in hell. Demons ripping them apart and reconstructing them forever.
Hey gang, it's me again, the hive of personalities that calls itself Duncan Trussell. And I'm here to tell you about today's sponsor, Squarespace.com, Are you thinking about starting a website or updating your website? Then you should go to squarespace.com because they've got everything you need to make a beautiful, award-winning website. They've got beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, and the ability to customize look, feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Not only that, but this entity I just summoned thinks they're great. Isn't that right, Gexnor?
It's wonderful. Now step from that circle, wizard.
Ha, I would, Gexnor, but you'd rip me to pieces. Also, I'm busy right now updating my Squarespace website, DuncanTrussell.com. That's right, I use Squarespace for the DTFH, and I love them. It's time for you to make it. Make a great website and make it stand out with Squarespace.com. Squarespace is used by architects, restaurants, bars and pubs, agencies, wizards, people who summon and chain demons, and now it can be used by you. Your destiny is calling. Make a website. Remember, I have a friend who sells her socks online. If she can make money selling her stinky socks online, then the sky's the limit for you. Head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace, and thank you, Gexnor, for vanquishing all those who stand in my way.
You cannot control me forever, human.
A tremendous thank you to all of my dear Patreon supporters. Do you want to dive deeper into the deep, mucousy inner folds of the DTFH, what some would call the vagina of the DTFH, then all you need to do is take those beautiful, sweet little fingers of yours, hold them up, look at your hands. Aren't they beautiful? Look at those appendages, your fingers. Think of all the things you're going to probe and prod with those beautiful fingers, and then go over to the keyboard and type, patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. You will have instant access to episodes of the DTFH that have yet to be released, as well as episodes of the DTFH that will never be released. Long, rambling things that I put up there from time to time that I'm afraid to put on the main feed because I'm scared of getting too spiritual or sentimental or compassionate because I still want to be cool and I want you to like me. And for some reason, I've stigmatized the idea that on the main feed, you're supposed to talk about the fact that we're all made of love and the most important thing is loving people around you. So you can get more of that stuff over at patreon.com/DTFH. Sign up and subscribe today, and thank you to all my subscribers. Also, if you feel like buying anything on Amazon.com that I mention on this podcast, search through DuncanTrussell.com to find the Amazon link. Amazon has some very strict rules about their Amazon link now, which means I can't say certain things about it. I can't say that anything you buy on Amazon, they give me a small percentage of it, and I can't say that by using the link, you're supporting the podcast. And so that's not what's happening. There's just a link over there. If you go through that link and buy something that I mention on the podcast, for example, right now, I'm mentioning a very expensive computer, the most expensive computer on Amazon. You should buy the most expensive computer on Amazon, but first go through my link. Buy anything, toilet paper, any kind of household items, anything that would fit inside of your house, anything that you would, I'm now naming anything that we would fit in your house or outside your house. And if you want to buy one of those things, click through the Amazon link and you will have that sent to your door. And I have now met the Amazon rules, but you got to really look deep through the website. Why would you do this? I love you. The fact that you would even spend more than a millisecond bothering with something like that is amazing to me. I thank you, whoever you may be. And for those of you who continue to use the link, much thanks to you. We also have a shop with t-shirts, posters, stickers, and a variety of beautiful things for you to decorate your home with, all at DuncanTrussell.com. Friends, do you have an itch to send me something? Well, put it in the mail and send it to Duncan Trussell, P.O. Box 26717, Los Angeles, California, 90026, and I feel compelled yet again to thank the guy who sent me that insane electric guitar. Holy shit, man. I don't know if I thanked you or if you got the letter of thanks, but if not, thank you so much. That's an incredible gift. And thank you to all of you who have been sending me stuff. God bless you. It's going to decorate many special rooms in my home. Friends, I just took a bit of a meditation class taught by David Nickturn this weekend, and I met a lot of you at the meditation class. And, you know, one of the things that kept coming up again and again is, what do you get from a spiritual practice? What kind of stuff do you get? And you do get stuff out of it. You get more focused, but more than that, you become aware of something that maybe you're not aware of now, which is impossible to even talk about because you have to do the practice, but it's very psychedelic and trippy and incredible. But what do you really get out of this stuff? Maybe you don't get anything that's as important as the fact that at some point, if you work on yourself long enough, you're going to get around somebody who is feeling bad, nervous, neurotic, freaked out, scared, unhappy, or is in a phase in their life where they really just need somebody to be a loving rock near them and to help them through whatever difficulties they happen to be going through. And for me, that person or one of those people is Jack Kornfield. This man is like a tuning fork, and whenever I get around him, he does an incredible job of helping me remember something that is so easy to forget, which is that there are a lot of wonderful things happening on the planet right now, no matter what the howling dogs of destruction are telling you on the news or on the internet. So I really hope that if you're feeling rough, this conversation with Jack Kornfield helps you feel a little better. Jack is a meditation teacher. He is an author who's written many wonderful books on meditation. One of my favorite books on meditation called A Path with Heart. You can get that on Audible. I like the one on Audible because I like listening to Jack's voice. He also teaches meditation classes all around the planet. You can find out more about him by going to his website, jackkornfield.com. All right, everybody. Unseal the locked iron coffin of your heart and open it up so that Jack Kornfield can spray great rainbow beams of sweet compassion and love all over your soul. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Jack Kornfield. Ha! Jack, thank you so much for letting me invade your home here and interview. How are you these days?
I'm terrific. Thank you, Duncan. The world's a mess, but I'm still good anyway.
The world is. Do you think the world is more of a mess or less of a mess
than like before you were born? What?
Yes.
What's the time frame, baby?
Let's say, I don't know, the early, before the 1900s. More of a mess or less of a mess?
It's a mess in a different way. There was infant mortality was off the charts. If you want to think about the blessings of modern life or how good it was back in the old days, just think about dentistry, for example, and you go, oh, I'm glad we have a little modern life. But then again, we're melting the global glaciers and ice caps. So, you know, it's a wash. I do remember this, though. My daughter, who is a asylum human rights lawyer who works for people whose lives are in danger around the world, she called me after the last election and she was weeping because she was afraid for all the vulnerable people that she works with and other things. And I went over and I talked to her, and I said, you know, this is not a new thing. My mom lived through, her dad came back from World War I. Lived through the Great Depression. She lived through World War II. So when things were bad, she said, yeah, I know what it's like to live through really bad times when the whole world was at war. And I said, Caroline, back a couple of generations ago, you know, in the late 60s when Martin Luther King was assassinated and Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and there were all the riots at the Democratic Convention and the war in Vietnam, and it felt like the government was lying to us about so many things and so forth, and we were out on the streets. And I said, every couple of generations, it comes around again. Mm. And I took off this red protection cord that I'd gotten, blessing cord from the Dalai Lama that I wear, and I wrapped it around her wrist, and I said, now it's your generation's turn. Mm-hmm. And you know how to do this, and this is what you've learned for your whole life, is how to stand up for what matters. And I give this to you, and we have to do this every generation or two, and this is part of what's asked of us as human beings in some honorable and dignified way.
I want to talk to you about this phenomenon, and I want to talk about young monk Jack Kornfield studying under Ajahn Chah. Did it occur to you that at some point that would be passed to you, and that you would have to, in some ways, not to put it in a too dramatic terms, but shoulder the burden of going from student to teacher? And if so, how did that make you feel?
Well, I need to read you a poem first, because you're talking about passing it on through generations, and it connects where we started in that conversation about the world, which is woven together unbearable beauty and an ocean of tears. And that's human incarnation, and this is where we are. I see her on TV. This poem is written about Emma Gonzalez by one of my favorite poets and friend in Oakland, Allison Luderman, who writes all kinds of great poetry. I see her on TV screaming into a microphone. Her head is shaved, and she's beautiful and 17, and her high school was just shot up. She had to walk by friends lying in their own blood, her teacher bleeding out, and she's my daughter, the one I never had, and she's your daughter and everyone's daughter, and she's her own woman in the fullness of her young fire, calling bullshit on the politicians who take money from the gun makers. Tears rain down her face, but she doesn't stop shouting. She doesn't apologize. She keeps calling them out, all of them, all of us, who didn't do enough to stop this thing. And you can see the gray faces of those who have always held power contort, utterly baffled to face this new breed of young woman, not silky, not compliant, not caring if they call her a 10 or a troll. And she cries, but she doesn't stop speaking truth into the microphone, though her voice is raw and shaking under the molten sun. I'm nearly 3,000 miles away, thinking how Neruda said the blood of the children ran through the streets without fuss. Only now she is, they are raising a fuss, shouting down the walls of Jericho. And it's not that we road-weary elders have been given the all clear exactly, but our shoulders do let down a little. We breathe from a deeper place. We say to each other, well, it looks like the baton may be passing to these next runners, and they are fleet as thought, fiery as stars. And we take another breath and say to each other, the baton has been passed, and we set off then, running hard behind them.
That's cool.
And I love the way she ends it, because it's not that we desert the what we care about. We run behind them too, but somehow we support them as well. And this was somehow the transmission to my daughter. So you're asking, did I have any idea when I was a young monk that I'd be carrying some little piece of this tradition? And it occurred to me, actually. I said, well, I'm learning this stuff, and it's not the kind of thing that I got in an Ivy League education. I'm going to tell you that. Nobody taught me about forgiveness or compassion or how to deal with my own anger and rage and outrage, and how to have a mindful and respectful conversation with another person. You know, I learned organic chemistry and, you know, medieval philosophy, and I learned all kinds of good Ivy League, you know, etiquette, but nothing really about the interior life of the heart, which is how we guide our lives.
Right.
And this is the education that not only I needed, but humanity needs. Because right now, if you look, no matter how space technology and nanotechnology and biotechnology and all this, you know, your cell phone that has the Great Library of Alexandria in your pocket.
Yes.
We still have continuing warfare, continuing racism, continuing environmental destruction, tribalism. A change of consciousness is desperately needed. Humanity has to learn to see that who we are is not this separate, encapsulated cowboy, separate from the rest of the world, but that we are interwoven in every breath with the winds that come across the Pacific and dust Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa, and before that dust the Fukushima nuclear reactor, that we're interwoven in every drop of water that we drink with the dolphins of the sea and the, you know, the melting ice caps, and that somehow we're in this together. We are family. And that consciousness, which was central to the awakenings in the monastery as a monk, to see this and know it and live differently, I thought, yeah, this is good stuff. Maybe I'll pass it on to somebody else someday.
When you...
That's a long answer, Duncan.
It's a beautiful answer. It's a beautiful answer. And I think it naturally leads to a question I had as you were reading that poem. And that's, you know, that phenomena is just incredible. And it's amazing to watch the, you know, geriatric, angry politicians freak out when they realize that they're being exposed as bribe takers, sophisticated bribe takers, but bribe takers. But still, in that poem, you have not this girl shrieking, yelling, angrily blasting out, "We are all one." But you have more anger, justified anger, righteous anger. How could you not be angry? You, school's bad enough, but now you have to go there and worry about getting shot. This is, I can't even imagine.
That's you getting put out of your misery when you're in high school.
In a way it is. It truly is.
You have to have a little kind of darkish nighttime humor about all of this. Humor. Yeah, but listen. When I was there at that march for our lives in Washington, part of what struck me was there was like 750,000 people out on Pennsylvania Avenue. And part of what struck me actually was how civil it was. There were kids and balloons and bicycles and families.
Right.
And there were people speaking from their guts and their hearts about how we have to stand up. And anger in it, of course, a kind of righteous anger. But that was not the main vibe. The main vibe actually was such that the security guards and the cops and all, everybody was smiling. There was some way, this is the world that we want to live in, a new world where people care about things, they can speak the truth, but also they're tender and respectful with one another. And so that's the change that will happen. Yes, it needs a certain passion. Yes, it needs a power. But you could also feel it was the power of love.
That's
right.
She's
saying, you know, not one more.
But there will be.
There will be. There will be next week. There will be until the not one more becomes so loud and so compelling that something changes. But even so, human incarnation isn't going to change because the world's awash in weapons.
That's right.
And we, as the United States of America, are the largest weapon supplier to the entire world. We have sold hundreds of billions of dollars of killing machines. Even our foreign aid, half of our foreign aid is, let's send weapons. And then we're not safe. And when we're arming the world, so...
Can I just interject something my Uber driver on the way over here just told me regarding that? Because I was saying, you know, look, this is... so many people, we are just very attached to hating Trump, very attached to hating him. It's fashionable to hate him. You're supposed to hate him. We don't like him. If you talk about Trump, you have to start it off by saying, you know, I don't like him.
Yeah.
But so here we are looking at the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, peace in the Korean Peninsula. one of the just powder kegs, and my Uber driver, Korean, is like, "This is the greatest thing ever. This is so great." And he said, "You know, he has family in South Korea,
of course."
And he says, "I don't like Trump, but that happened because of him. That happened because of him, and we all have to deal with that." But then he said something, because then I was like, "Yes." Can you imagine if by some awful, insane, terrible stroke of weird, catastrophic luck, Trump is the one who brings global peace, if somehow peace breaks out in the Middle East somehow? And he said, no, that's not going to happen. Because, like you said, the United States is one of the number one weapons manufacturers. He literally said what you just said. This is the sinister thing he said. He said, if you're selling umbrellas, you need it to rain. And in the same way, if you're selling weapons, you need war. And that is where we're at right now, which is we have a massive industry located in Los Angeles, by the way. You know, I didn't know that.
Right in your neighborhood.
Right in our neighborhood. So what about that? What about that, Jack? What do we do about that? And I'm sorry to go on this rant. I'm sorry about that. Well, this is my question.
Rant, Duncan. I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you're ranting.
No, because what we see is, like, you see this, you know, peace, 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 peace. And yet on Twitter, it's hate, 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 hate. I hate
Take
Trump.
A breath, Duncan. Take a breath. Let's change
Thank
the
you, teacher.
Elements of this conversation. Because you're talking in your rant with a lot of passion and some real intelligence, although it's partial intelligence, but it's still important. Well, and you're laughing about it, not because you're a partially intelligent guy or anything like that, but because... of course, words and views are always one-sided. There's another perspective. And if Donald Trump can bring peace and denuclearize the Korean Peninsula or the world, hallelujah, thank you. I bow to that.
Yes.
But you ask a much deeper question. You know, we are awash in arms. And it is... the weapons in the heart that have to be denuclearized. It is the landmines in the heart. It's the AK-47s. It's the cruise missiles in the heart.
Yeah.
These things come from humanity. And when you have kids in a kindergarten or preschool and they start whacking each other with blocks, you separate them. You say, use your words. You teach them small elements of civilized behavior,
right,
when their aggression comes. Couldn't we learn as a species to say to our leaders, use your words? How about that? How about solving? There will be conflict. There's always conflict. Conflict is that we have different desires, different needs, and so forth. We have to figure out how to share the earth and share what we have. There are different ways to solve conflict, and there is a better game than war. There has to be some other way to do it. I mean, the Olympics were supposed to be that, but now we have Olympics and war. Hallelujah, we have them all at the same time. So here's two short little things to say about the spirit in which we make the change, because we're on a kind of a cusp, and everybody can feel it. Are we headed toward yet more conflict? Are we headed toward just continuing the denigration of certain people, you know, the growing gap between ultra-rich and the enormous number of poor people in the world? Right. So two little stories. One, my friend and colleague Wes Nisker, Scoop Nisker, who was a great radio person in the Bay Area for a long time, but also a Buddhist teacher, went to interview Gary Snyder. Gary Snyder is in his mid-80s. He's one of the founders of the modern environmental movement, Pulitzer Prize winner for Earth Household and other things that he wrote 50 years ago about bioregionalism and how we care for the earth. And he said, Gary, he said, you look out, there's global warming, climate change, loss of species, oceans rising. What advice do you have for us at this time? And Gary looked back and said, don't feel guilty.
Wow.
If you feel guilty, or angry or, you know, frightened, you add that same destructive energy to the energy that's already caused the mess that we're in.
Wow.
So if we're going to save it, it's not going to be out of guilt or anger or fear. It's going to be saved because we love it, because it's us. And the only power that can meet the power of weaponry and the power of those who aren't afraid to kill is those who aren't afraid to die, those who aren't afraid to love no matter what. And you see Martin Luther King standing up in his after the church was bombed and children were killed, and he says, "We will meet your physical force with soul force."
Wow.
And that soul force will... That is the only thing that's a match. That's Gandhi's power. That's the power, actually, in every generation. And even as we speak, and we have this 1 hour or whatever that we talk together, the news is all about the unusual. You know, dog bites man doesn't get into the news, you know.
Right.
All these people got home during the commute safely does not get into the news. Today, you know, 334,000 airplanes landed safely in the world doesn't get into the news. The fact during this hour that we're speaking that there are 7 billion times maybe 10, 70 billion small acts of kindness on this earth, that people actually stopped at a red light so you could go through the green like those kindergartners. Okay,
yes.
You hold your, you know, that doesn't make the news. All that makes the news is what will grab your attention, like it's going to grab some part of your anatomy.
Yes.
Is the stuff in the lowest part of the brainstem. And when that gets activated, we don't follow the dignity and the truth that we actually know. Story number two.
Great.
So I'm at a demonstration at the San Francisco International Airport a year ago or so after the executive order was passed to prevent people from the 7 predominantly Muslim countries from entering the country. And all these people were stuck in airports. And my daughter and a whole group of young immigration lawyers and human rights lawyers went down there. There were more lawyers there than there were people behind, you know, being caught. And they put up signs, free legal advice to anyone who needed immigration help and so forth. But there was a couple thousand people down there, all chanting and demonstrating, no ban, no fear, all of that.
Yes.
My favorite part, we went to one of the exit gates. There were 400 people chanting. And in the middle of this crowd by the gate was a New Orleans jazz band. So the crowd would be chanting, no ban, no fear, refugees are welcome here. The drummer would kick in behind them with a nice beat. Then the trumpet would come on top and lay this really cool riff on top. The sax player cut in. Pretty soon everyone is, no ban, no fear, refugees, welcome. It turning into music. All the airport security personnel, everybody's smiling. It's a work of art. We're there. We're protesting. They know that it matters to us, but we're doing it with art and beauty. And you almost can't deny something happening. And so there's something about bringing a different consciousness than just, oh, I'm against this, and these are bad, and these are good guys. Molly Ivins, who is a great, she was a best-selling author, New York Times columnist, Texas, you know, firebrand, and before she died, she said, beloveds, as you go out there and raise hell and kick ass and fight for the good, she said, be sure to have a good time doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Really, make sure that you're having a good time and let everyone know that this is the fight that you can have and that you can enlist other people. And that it was a lot of fun to do this, to actually do this and say, we're on the train, the bandwagon for the transformation that the world needs.
Wow.
And to do it, you need two things. In Zen, they say there are only two things. You sit and you sweep the garden, and it doesn't matter how big the garden is, which is to say you quiet the mind and tend the heart. Sit is sort of Zen shorthand for get your inner shit together in some way, right? You come into yourself, you quiet yourself enough so you're not acting out of fear and reactivity and, you know, kind of adding to the chaos and the tangle. And then like Gandhi, who took one day a week in silence, and it didn't matter that he was taking apart the entire British Empire, and they'd say, Gandhiji, Gandhiji, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets and people being killed and shot and so forth. We have to do something. He said, I'm sorry, Thursday is my silent day. I have to get quiet and listen to what is the deepest and truest and most honest and honorable move I can make, that we all can make. Maybe it's just to go and pull some salt from the sea, the salt march.
Yeah.
I have to do that, and then I get up. You sit, and then you go out into the garden of the world, and it's not your job to change the world. That would be hubris. Okay, you, Duncan Trussell, through your show, are going to redeem this world, this human world. But it's your job to bring your gift and to mend the part that you can touch. And you will be depressed and unhappy with yourself and sort of swept over by the low brainstem, you know, stuff that comes through the news. If you don't do it, because they want you to feel helpless. They want you to feel that there's nothing that can be done. It's too big. It's too much. That's part of the psychological form of the misuse of news and communication and politics. And you're not fucking helpless. And you're not someone who can't make a difference.
Right.
And therefore, when you reach out and you say, I will do my part. I can mend this part that my hand can touch. I can see this. And whatever it is, raising conscious children, making a conscious business, standing up for justice, looking at economic disparity, you know, looking at who's been targeted, what communities are vulnerable, and helping or standing up for that. When you do it, all of a sudden you become a participant in creating a different world.
Wow. That is so beautiful. What it's like, this is one massive garden.
Yes,
and we're
it
all
is.
We've been assigned these little patches, these little patches. So this is beautiful.
Something to say about garden.
Okay.
So you keep going.
Okay, this is beautiful because you are, to me, this is a formula for, a pragmatic formula for a potential world peace. If we all start tending to our gardens in the way that you're talking about, if we all figure out a way to become more conscious, more compassionate, to denuclearize our internal Korean peninsula, so to speak, and then tend to the garden around us, who knows what could happen, but
it has to start here.
Has to There's, start here.
This is this, the origin of it. Mind and heart is the origin of how our world works.
I love it, but this is what I. This is the you are such an incredible fireman. But people call you people Buddhists. A better word is you extinguish these blazes. But the for me, my current blaze is, I am so frustrated and pissed off, I guess you could say, annoyed, not with the world, but at people who are pissed off at the world and are blasting all this. And I recognize the deep hypocrisy in that statement, but these people blasting so much hate, infinite hate. It feels to me that a great many people are deeply invested in the world being rotten because it gives them a chance to fire off infinite tweets or Facebook posts about how rotten the world is. They're spraying out so much fear and so much, so they don't, there's no forgiveness there. Anytime anyone does anything, these people who do these monstrous things, you know, the ferocity with which they're attacked, it's is so in its own way abhorrent that it makes me feel like, oh, great. Well, like now you guys are just another version of that thing. So what I'm saying, I guess what I would ask is what are people to do if they start realizing they're actually attached, not to the idea of there being world peace or to being beautiful gardeners of consciousness, but they're more addicted to just being angry all the time. And they're pretending that they're gardeners.
So James Baldwin put it this way. He said, I believe that one of the reasons people cling to their hate and prejudice so stubbornly is that they sense that once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with their own pain. So when there's hate there, I become really curious. And it's not to say I can't get triggered, because I can, when people are acting in a horrible way and increasing the suffering and the polarization of the world, or increasing the suffering of those who are vulnerable. I can get triggered and, you know, really upset. So
right.
I'm not just like Mr. Calm over here. But from a deeper place, one has to become, I have to become interested in what is it under there that makes people be hateful. And almost always in my experience, it's their level of pain, despair, insecurity, fears, the fact that they haven't been respected in some way, that they've lost their own sense of dignity and agency. And, you know, I see that over and over again. You know, when I was in Palestine and Israel doing some peace work, you know, I could feel from the most kind of vehement, hateful side in that underneath it was, I've been, first of all, I'm terrified these other people are going to take everything, kill my family, whatever. But also under it was so much trauma. And a lot of it's unconscious, and then it just gets re-traumatized. So in that regard, you know, when I think about all these people who are hateful and so forth, I would rather look at, well, what is the fear you carry? What is the depression you carry? And how is the society not helping you? We live in a society with so much loss of jobs, economic injustice, lack of respect, you know, in the way that it's been being organized now. There are a lot of people who feel there's nothing better to do than that. That's the
right.
only move. And then we project it out because we can't bear our insecurity. We can't bear that pain is actually ours. So we blame it on the Mexicans, or we blame it on the Muslims, or we blame it on the communists, or we blame it on the blacks or the yellow or the brown or somebody who looks different than us in some way or other. And we project it all out because we can't bear the insecurity of being a human being.
I gotcha.
And the truth is that we are vulnerable, and no one teaches us that that's okay. The poet Rilke writes, ultimately, it's upon your vulnerability that you depend. And what that line means is that every time you go through a traffic light or drive on the right-hand side of the street, your life depends on the fact that somebody's going to drive on the correct side of the street coming toward you. That every time you buy food in the market, or even the farmer's market, because
yes.
you're like this hip person, goes to the farmer's market and can afford it, whatever, you know, you trust that that person didn't put some lethal amount of pesticide on that food.
Right.
That we are vulnerable to one another every day in every stage of our life. And to recognize this means that we're in it together. But people who don't know this, who don't understand our human lot, that we're these beautiful and maybe sometimes slightly ugly flowers that are planted in this garden of life, that we are life and so forth, that we're in it together, get swept away by this. And of course, it's easy to judge the people who are judgmental, right?
Yes.
As you say, the hypocrisy, and to hate those who are hate mongers.
Yes.
And then you say, now that's interesting. What is that? Well, that energy washes in through your nervous system. It activates you. Yeah, let's get on the hate train. We can
right.
we can match them. And then you say, you know, that's not actually the place I want to live. And that's not the place of consciousness that we need. There's a beautiful book. I was recently in Dharamsala for the Mind Life Science meetings with the Dalai Lama and all these neuroscientists.
Wow.
There's recently a book called The Book of Joy that was published. New York Times bestseller, for anyone that still reads books, by the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu from South Africa, both Nobel Prize winners and good friends. And Tutu came up to Dharamsala And they spent a week answering the question, how can you two men who've seen so much suffering, how can you be happy and joyful and laugh? And Tutu has this kind of giggle that's just totally wonderful. But he lived through apartheid and saw his friends and colleagues be shot down or necklaced, you know, with a tire around yeah. their neck, set on fire.
Yeah.
And the Dalai Lama every week talks to people who are walking over the Himalayas, sometimes almost barefoot, to escape being tortured in Chinese army prisons because they say the word Dalai Lama, or their temples are being, you know, closed down or burned, or the nuns put in prison. And yet people go to hear the Dalai Lama, partly, yes, he's a world figure, Nobel laureate, or he has these beautiful Tibetan teachings that none of us really quite completely understand, but it seems really cool,
yeah.
you know. But I think people go to hear the Dalai Lama by the tens of thousands because they would love to hear him laugh.
Wow, yeah.
And the fact that somebody who can carry that weight of suffering and still have a joyful heart gives us hope. And when he's asked about it in this book, he said, they've taken so much from me. You know, they've taken our temples, they've taken our sacred texts, they've taken our religious freedom, they're taking our land and culture. Why should I let them take my happiness? Hmm. So we become the, I'll use different languages, we become the pollen, you know, what kind of fragrance are we going to spread through the world, you know? And if you go and work in a refugee camp or places where people are, you know, imprisoned and so forth, and you go and you're really depressed, it doesn't help them. They don't want a depressed person coming in.
Yeah, it's, right.
It doesn't. You're, you know, right. There's some way in which actually you have a dignity of spirit and you have a freedom to choose your spirit no matter the circumstances. And that's your deep and fundamental freedom.
This is, it's so beautiful and it's so true. It seems like so many people are more interested in producing a reaction of horror or grief or guilt or whatever it is. It seems like the height of selfishness to go into a refugee camp, make sure you film me weeping, to go into the room of someone dying. What am I going to do without you? To do all these things, it seems to be I'll tell you, Mitzi Shore, who was the owner of the Comedy Store and one of my teachers, died recently, and we had a memorial. And man, it's the most amazing thing to watch comedians
die.
Not die. Hold on a second. Don't wishful
not
thinking.
Not yet, Duncan. Don't do it yet.
We still have 30 minutes. No, to see comedians talk about, you know, someone who has just passed away, and many of them, it's so beautiful and poignant and hilarious and offensive. It would be to a civilian, it would just be the most offensive thing you ever heard. But what's really funny is a few of them managed to not even talk about Mitzi, but to just sort of give themselves accolades for all their great success, because mm-hmm. the memorial was actually just an excuse for them
to do stand
to be up on stage and to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
And so in the same way, I think that the world and the catastrophes and the disasters and the perceived disasters and the real disasters for many people people aren't even drawn to truly wanting to like help this garden, but they want to be on stage screaming about how rotten things are. That seems that to me what's going down is that people have become attached to the horror, and they wouldn't want, this is what I was thinking. I wonder how many of these people who just despise Trump with all of their heart, if they secretly could choose between Trump bringing world peace and there being war, how many of them would pick war? Because they would rather there be a cataclysm than they be wrong about somebody. That's what I was thinking. That, you know, to me, this seems like on both sides, people have become attached to being miserable. Not me, though.
Not you? You're not?
I'm being a little sarcastic. I think there is an attachment there. Mm. There is an attachment to the living in the world of like, well, what are we going to rant? Jack, if we have a beautiful garden where we've all tended to it and it's beautiful and it's peaceful, what are we rant? What are you going
to
rant about?
So I have, you know, when I look inside and listen to you and try to get quiet, there's a couple of things. In terms of Trump, you know, if he can make peace on the and denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and gets a Nobel Prize for it, I would be very happy about that. And I also realize that many of the other policies and statements that he's been making fuel hatred elsewhere right. in the world, create dissension, target and really harm vulnerable people in all kinds of circumstances, often the people who are already the most vulnerable in the right. society, put all the power and money flowing more directly to a very small elite and so forth. So while I would celebrate that, the thing is I'm more interested in seeing honestly and clearly than being attached to my opinions, which I certainly have. So right. I would celebrate that. See, you're sort of talking about black and white. You love them or hate them. That's also a very, how do you say it, early undeveloped, developmentally speaking, children either see their parents as all good right. when they give them ice cream or all bad when they say they have to go to sleep.
Right.
And there's a developmental stage that happens at some point where you realize that your parents are both good and bad.
Yes.
You know, and that the world is both good and bad. Now, part of what you're talking about is in the human heart. Part of it is also the current technology, because we get fed, or we choose, we go to the buffet of news online very often and so forth, and the algorithms, the main goal of Facebook, Google is to capture your attention, and the easiest way to capture the attention of a human being is to scare them.
Right.
It's also true for politicians. You know, the whole aim of politics is to frighten the populace.
Right.
To say, oh, we need a strong leader. That's a lot of how it works.
Right.
So we are actually the best paid psychologists in America are working on algorithms to grab the attention from your brain, and particularly the best way to do it is the lower part of your brainstem through greed and hatred
gotcha.
and fear
okay.
and so forth. So when you see it, you go, oh, okay, that's what's happening out there. I'm not that interested in that game. Actually, who I am is so much bigger than that.
Right.
And I'm going to cut my news down to 10 minutes a day. Basically, you know the plot. There'll be some new thing that happens. If there's an earthquake that day, there's a law that's passed that harms people or helps people.
Right.
10 minutes will get you the gist of it. And why run the rest of that through your nervous system? And then, instead of running it through your nervous system, say, now I'm a free agent, I'm a human being, and I'm going to do what is really true to my own heart.
Beautiful.
So, and then, you know, when we talk about what you do, how you respond to this world, again, you sit, you quiet the mind, you kind of listen inside, and then you see what your gift is. And my friend Maladoma Somei, who's a wonderful West African shaman and medicine man with a couple of PhDs, you know, in his back pocket, and kind of extraordinary. If anyone's interested, I think it's Man in the Water of Life might be the title of his first book on his initiation in Africa. But anyway, he said that among the Dogara people in West Africa, it's believed that every child who is born carries a certain cargo. And I like this metaphor. It's like the cargo ships that ply the rivers in West Africa. And that your job in this human incarnation is to deliver your cargo.
Wow.
That you have a particular, you know, gift or something to bring. And then I'm going to read you a story that kind of helps to illustrate it.
That's so beautiful. I've heard a different version of that, which is a baby comes with a sandwich under his arm. Have you heard that one?
I haven't. And
it's less beautiful.
Pastrami or what? What is this?
It depends on...
Or grilled cheese.
It depends on what deli you went to before he was born.
Right, of course, or when you got pregnant. So here's the story, if I can find it for you. Yeah. Well, what is the baby supposed to do with the sandwich while I'm looking?
The baby, I guess the baby, you know, gives you that's part of what happens when children are coming to the world is this light.
They come with a sandwich, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess whoever came up with that saying was clearly
sandwich
hungry.
Trailing clouds of glory and mustard and ketchup or whatever it is, mayonnaise. Okay. So here's the story. This Hawaiian educator named Puanani Burgess, she says one of the processes she uses to help in schools and communities to get people talk together is called building the beloved community. And the exercise of it requires people to tell three stories. The first is the story of all your names. The second is the story of your community. And the third is the story of your gift. So one time, she says, I did this process in our local high school. We went around a circle and we got to this young man and he told the story of his names well and the story of his community. But when it came to tell the story of his gift, he said, hey, what mess, what kind of gift do you think I get? I mean, I'm in this special ed class. I have a hard time reading. I can't do math. Why you shame me like this, make me ask what my gift is? If I had a gift, you think I'd be in this special ed class? You know, here we are. And so the boy just shut down and shut up. And she says, I felt really shamed. I've never wanted to shame anyone, but it can happen. You know how we are. So a couple weeks later, she writes, I'm in a local grocery store and I see him going down one of those aisles. And I decide, nope, I don't think I'm going to go that direction. And I start to turn around. But somehow he sees me and he runs toward me. Auntie, I've been thinking about you, what 2 weeks I've been thinking, what my gift? What's my gift? I say, okay, brother, what's your gift? He says, you know, I've been thinking, I can't do that math stuff, and I can't read so good. But, Auntie, when I stay in the ocean, I can call the fish, and the fish, he come every time. And every time my family not have very much, I can put food on my family table. Every time. And sometime when I stay in the ocean, and the shark, he come, and he look at me, and I look at him, and I tell him, Uncle, I'm not going to take plenty fish. I just take 1-2 fish just for my family. All the rest I leave for you. And so the shark, he say, oh, you cool, brother. And I tell the shark, Uncle, you cool. And the shark, he go his way and I go my way. And I look at this boy and I know what a genius he is. But in our society, the way the schools are set up or the values we have, he's rubbish. He's not appreciated. So when I talk to his teacher and principal, I ask, what would his life have been if this curriculum were gift-based? What if we were able to see the gift in each of our children and taught around their uniqueness and gifts? What would happen to our community if we were gift-based, if we could really understand that each of us has a gift and our communities could draw on that and support that? So, I'm thinking about or I'm picturing those who are listening because, again, our society limits what we see as valuable to certain, you know, you have to have money or you have to have this kind of degree or you know, to make a difference, you have to be this or that kind of person. And that's simply untrue. That who you are as a human being already carries gifts. And who you are as a human being has an innate dignity. You could call it Buddha nature or true nature. Who you are as a human being knows things, knows you're connected with the world, knows that underneath, no matter how depressed or cynical or even angry you are, there's some way in which you also want to be loved and you want to offer love because it's innate to us. And the fact is that we are love, that consciousness and love are the same thing. I think we were all together in the Big Bang and we miss each other, you know, or something like that. But when you get quiet, you know things much more deeply in your heart. And if there's a tremendous amount of hatred and fear and so forth, it's only because underneath that, there's a tremendous amount of pain and anguish.
Wow.
And can you hold that with compassion? When you can, it starts to ferment and get transformed and like fertilizer when you can hold your measure of tears and sorrow with some deep compassion, say, this is the human life I've, you know, been born into, and I can hold it in this way. And things start to change.
Man, this is so perfect. I am so grateful to you, Jack. This is just you have such a gift. You have such a gift, and it's really it's something that I wish I could stay in that place all the time.
But you can't.
Well, no. It's so easy to forget all this.
And you're not supposed to, Duncan. That would be another ideal, and then you could judge yourself. I'm really a crappy spiritual person, and I can't stay there. And
yeah.
I want to be, you know, Mother Teresa or something. Like, you just don't look like her, you know? And you never will, you know, and it's just not going to happen. Plus,
right.
Which, when Mother Teresa went into San Quentin to visit and came up to Marin, to the Bay Area, before she left, she said to the prisoner, she said, "No, I need to ask a really big favor, something important." She said, "I want you to pray for me because I got a big job in this world and I really need help." Wow. And there's something about the kind of, you could call it humility, but really just understanding that we're all in this together. And the idea that you get into some state and keep it that way, Mother Teresa also could get annoyed, by the way, you know?
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to get into this big, expanded, wonderful state of consciousness, and yeah. I'm going to hold it, and I'll just keep it there. Keep it. And you can't breathe. But the thing is that the heart pumps, and the lungs open and close, and the body breathes, and the lunar cycles change, and the tide comes and goes, and the menstrual cycles, and the stock market cycles, and consciousness. The mind and heart also open and close, and the ideas and to have it open all the time. I love everything all the time. I just love it. No, sometimes you need to be quiet. Sometimes you need to tend the garden in a very simple place. Sometimes you need to wait till the sun goes down and just get interior. Sometimes you need to renew yourself, and then you open up again. And sometimes you lose it and say, "Oh, wow, boy, I really lost it this
yes.
morning, huh?" That's what consciousness does. With some amusement, and then you kind of pick yourself back up again and say, "Well, that was interesting." And because the ideals and the notion of perfecting yourself, it's folly. I mean, you're going
right.
to perfect your body? Forget it. Just look closely at it. You're going to perfect your personality?
Right.
That's even more hopeless, right?
Yeah.
You're going to perfect your mind? Look at your thoughts. It has no pride, right? So the point, I mean, yes, you can do your therapy and do your meditation and, you know, jog and have a good diet and all these things and you get a little bit better. But the point, and you can say, okay, how's that going? But the point is not to perfect yourself, to perfect your love. And to perfect your love means to see yourself and other beings, the flawed beings that we are, with the eyes of love. And to understand that that's, it's the truth, it's the healing balm, it's the thing that makes not only the heart sing, but actually makes what we care about come alive on the earth.
Jack, thank you so much. As Good. Always, this is a beautiful moment for me. I'm so grateful that I get to spend any amount of time with you at all.
Oh, me too, Duncan.
What about everyone else who wants to spend time with you? How can they find you?
They can go to jackhornfield.com. And there are a few things that might be interesting to the people who are listening. If they go to jackhornfield.com or to soundstrue.com, Jack Kornfield, I have a program called Mindfulness Daily together with Tara Brach. It's 15 minutes a day of teachings and meditations for 40 days. And
cool.
It's really cheap. It's like $29
wow, cool.
or something. And you can listen to this. And it's your way, or it's one good way, of tending your own heart and then learning how to express it. Now, I've got all kinds of books and other, you know, podcasts and various things like that. Or they can come to Spirit Rock, which is the beautiful meditation center in the Bay Area.
Or Paris. You're flying to Paris.
Or Paris in London, right? Or we could go and all meet at the Dalai Lama's house in Dharamsala or things like that. That's also fine. Yeah.
You are teaching in Paris.
I am
up.
Teaching in Paris and London this summer as well. Yes.
Great.
So, Duncan, thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
It's always an honor to talk. We have to do this again sometime.
I hope so. I'm all so
right.
grateful. Thank you, Jack.
My
Hare
pleasure.
Krishna. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like Jack, why not go to his website, jackkornfield.com. Take one of his classes. Read one of his books. Go deeper. Much thanks to squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. And much thanks to you for listening. I'm so lucky that I have this job, and it couldn't happen without you. Keep up the good work. You're going to be fine. I love you. I will see you real soon. Until then, Hare Krishna.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.